Welcome aboard the Voyages podcast. I'm John Orkett, and like you, I've been living through the COVID-19 pandemic, which has kept me close to home over the last several months. Also, like many of you, the first thing I'm going to do once we've emerged on the other side of the pandemic is travel, as often and as widely as I'm able. Whether it's to the next state over or to the other side of the globe, I love traveling because it allows you to see firsthand the forces that have shaped Earth and its vast diversity of life, as well as the landscapes that have inspired scientists and artists to better understand these forces and our relationship to our planet. If you too are looking forward to exploring the world of ideas, join me now on our maiden voyage. One of the things that's taken some of the sting out of COVID-19 is my home, the city of Spokane, Washington. Spokane can be a great place for wandering, and, as it happens, heading out for a daily wander like this one is my favorite way of keeping the monotony of pandemic life at bay. No matter which direction I turn after heading out my front door, I always wind up somewhere interesting, whether it's a nearby wetland or a viewpoint out over the valley carved by Latah Creek. My favorite walk, though, takes me to a patch of land that somehow remains undeveloped, through fields and ponderosa pine woodlands alive with marmots, quail, and ravens, and up a small, rocky bluff overlooking my neighborhood. It's the flora and fauna that bring me here, but it's the rocks that form the bluff itself that I want to focus on today. These rocks are fairly nondescript, especially by Spokane standards. They're dark gray, mostly featureless except for the occasional boulder with a Swiss cheese-like texture, and any geologist would immediately identify them as basalt. Basalt columns welcome visitors at the airport. Basalt forms the base over which Spokane Falls flows. The Olmsted brothers used basalt in landscaping throughout Manitou Park, and homes on both South and North Hill often feature large basalt outcrops in their backyards. In short, basalt is everywhere in the Lilac City, and this makes it easy to overlook. If you know how to read it, though, Spokane's bedrock tells an amazing story. It's a story that takes us back 16 million years to a time when, rather than today's landscape of pine-covered hills and river valleys, you'd have encountered a hellscape of molten lava stretching from horizon to horizon. Unlike many rock types, it's not hard to visualize how basalt forms. You can see it forming in real time in places like Hawaii and Iceland as lava erupted from volcanoes cools on Earth's surface. Its presence in Spokane, then, tells you that similar volcanoes must have once existed not far from here. As you visit sites around town, though, some differences start to become clear. In places like Riverside State Park, you can see many layers of basalt, suggesting that the area experienced not just one eruption, but several. In the same park, you can see the exposed sediments and fossils of the Latah Formation between basalt layers, showing that these eruptions were far enough apart in time for lakes to form behind lava dams, and for complex ecosystems to develop around those lakes. You can even see the frozen moment in time when a new lava flow erupted over these sediments and seeped into them, distorting and melting them in the process. Travel a little further afield and another key difference becomes apparent. These were lava flows on a scale unlike anything on our planet today, vast enough to fill in valleys and overtop hills between Spokane and the Cascade Mountains, giving us the flatlands of today's Columbia Plateau. Only in places like Palouse Canyon or the Columbia River Gorge, where flowing water has cut into these basalts, does the overwhelming size of these eruptions become clear. Not only was an enormous amount of lava erupted, but it flowed for a long way, as you can find dead ringers for Spokane's basalt from the Idaho Panhandle to the Oregon coast. The massive scope of what are collectively known as the Columbia River basalts is only part of their story. Geochemists studying the composition of the basalts could tell you how the age of each flow has been nailed down, and how their origins have been traced to the area where Washington, Oregon, and Idaho meet. Paleoclimatologists could tell you how the greenhouse gases released by these eruptions heated Earth's atmosphere, and paleobotanists could tell you about the forests that flourished in the warm, wet climates that resulted. The story of Spokane's basalt is a truly epic one, and yet most of us who live here, and nearly all our visitors, simply walk over these rocks without sparing a thought for the geological saga they tell. The Spokane landscape also tells stories about how we understand the world around us. Visit Turnbull National Wildlife Refuge, just south of town, and you'll find yourself in the midst of a beautiful patchwork of wetlands, forests, and grassland that are home to moose, coyotes, porcupines, and migrating birds. Look at those lakes on a map or from a plane, though, and an unusual pattern starts to emerge. The lakes are all roughly parallel to one another, suggesting that they were all dredged out by the same force. It was these channeled scablands and the system of coulees further west that led maverick geologist J. Harlan Bretz to suggest that the geography of eastern Washington had been shaped not by the gradual growth and retreat of glaciers, but by a series of cataclysmic floods. It was later confirmed that the source of these floods was a glacially dammed lake that existed just upstream in western Montana during the Ice Ages. These realizations shook the world of geology, drastically altering the way we think about the impact of catastrophic events. And here in Spokane, we lead our lives in the natural laboratory that led Bretz to his groundbreaking conclusions. Both these Ice Age floods and the much older eruption of the Columbia River basalts are events that happened on an almost unimaginably huge scale, one that's hard to comprehend without traveling across the landscapes they shaped. Both also require some background information in order for their stories to make sense. But a visit to the lakes of Turnbull Wildlife Refuge, or the basalt canyons at Bowl and Pitcher on the Spokane River, becomes richer if you have the tools to read the story being told by those landscapes. And here's the thing. I'm using Spokane as an example simply because I live here, and I'm using two geological stories as case studies only because, as a paleontologist, I have a degree in geology. Everywhere you call home and every place you've ever visited has just as many stories to tell. These stories may illustrate a wide range of scientific and cultural ideas, and going somewhere in pursuit of those stories with the background to make sense of them makes travel an infinitely more rewarding experience. To give a couple of examples from some of my recent trips, you can have a walk through the woods around Barbizon, near Paris, and have a lovely day out. But if you know that the patterns of shadow and shade around you are what inspired a group of artists to drag French landscape painting, kicking and screaming, into the modern era, that trip can forever change how you view art. A road trip through the Four Corner States would be pretty epic in and of itself, taking you past some of the best scenery in the world. If, however, you know how the region's fossils track the evolution of dinosaurs from small, mostly predatory animals to a hugely diverse group that includes the largest animals ever to live on land. Now that trip is also one through time, alongside one of the animal kingdom's most spectacular dynasties. There are plenty of outstanding travel podcasts out there, as well as lots of great science and art history podcasts. My hope for Voyages is that it never neatly fits into either category. It's very much meant to be about concepts and people in STEAM. That's science, technology, engineering, art, and math, for those of you who are as bad at acronyms as I am. But also ties those concepts to specific places that illustrate them, or that gave rise to important ideas. It's designed to inspire people to visit new places or to revisit old favorites with new eyes, and to give you not only the information you need to explore that place, but to explore the larger world of ideas associated with it. Of course, I can't introduce a podcast about traveling to experience and understand stories without acknowledging that many stories are far from uplifting. We are active characters in several such stories today, the pandemic among them. Places I've lived are integral to these stories, revealing their deep roots in science and culture. I went to college in Chicago, for example, and lived for a year in Bristol, England. Chicago has given rise to some of America's greatest literature, much of it born of the racial segregation and economic inequality in that city. Bristol is a wonderland of industrial architecture, but its wealth arose in large part from the slave trade. The crowning glory of my childhood home of Seattle is the series of national parks that surround it. Olympic, Mount Rainier, and North Cascades are justifiably famed for their diversity of ecosystems as you move from sea level upwards, but the higher altitude areas of all three are showing clear evidence of the impacts of climate change. Because we are active characters in ongoing stories such as those surrounding COVID-19, racial injustice, and climate change, we have some power to shape those stories' endings. Travel alone won't, of course, solve any of these problems. In fact, when done irresponsibly, it can make climate change quite a bit worse. But understanding the world around us and how we interact with it gives us a clearer idea of how we got where we are today. More optimistically, it gives us some idea of how to move forward, and I hope that in some very small way, Voyages can help us all make better sense of a confusing and often frustrating world. This episode has been an introduction to the Voyages podcast and what it's all about. which ironically means it's very different from what most episodes will be. In a normal episode, we'd take a deeper dive into a destination, the story it tells, and some of the logistics of visiting it. All the places I used as examples today, the Columbia River basalts, Bretz's floods, the Barbizon painters, Chicago's literary legacy, and so on, would be fantastic topics to delve into in a lot more detail, and I hope we have the opportunity to do just that at some point going forward. Besides being longer and more focused, the other big difference you'll hear in later episodes is that it won't just be me reading from a script, at least not most of the time. All my favorite podcasts are built around conversations, and that's the format that Voyages will, for the most part, follow. If you want to hear what a normal episode sounds like, you don't have long to wait, as the topic for our first full-length episode is set, and I'll be talking to Dr. Wynn McLaughlin about Kyrgyzstan and how it was a crossroads for animal life millions of years before it was a crossroads of cultures on the Silk Road. Of course, this conversational format only works when I have people to have conversations with. So besides the usual ways of supporting a podcast, liking, subscribing, rating, and telling your friends, you can support this one by pitching me ideas and being a guest. You don't have to be an expert on a particular place or concept, but if you've traveled somewhere that you think tells a compelling story, then I'd love to talk with you about it. All you have to do if you think you have an idea is answer two questions. One, where are we going on this episode? And two, what story does that place tell? Stories from any relevant field of STEAM are welcome. Since I and many of my friends are scientists, I suspect that the first few episodes will skew heavily towards the ST and E part of STEAM, but I also encourage any of you with literary, artistic, and musical destinations to contact me as well. You can do so by emailing the podcast at voyagepod, all one word, at gmail.com, or through our website at voyagepod.wordpress.com, where summaries and relevant links for episodes will also be posted. Thanks to all of you for listening, and I hope you'll join me on all the voyages to come. Hey, Voyagers. I've got just one more thing before I sign off. I don't intend for this podcast to ever become one that's clogged with advertisements, but given that the goal is to celebrate scientists and artists, I have no qualms plugging the music that we feature. It was clear from the moment that I came up with the idea for this episode that it had to be set to Stravinsky's The Rite of Spring. Ever since Disney animated some really spectacular dinosaurs and volcanoes over it in Fantasia, it's been a favorite to those of us with an interest in natural history, and its air of mystery seems perfect for kicking off a podcast about exploring the world. I also really wanted to feature the artist performing this version of The Rite, John Kimura Parker. I was fortunate enough to hear him play a few years ago. If you know me, you know that I'm properly stingy when it comes to giving standing ovations, and his was one of a handful of performances I've heard in my life that was really deserving of one. He was kind enough to give me permission to play his music on Voyages, for which I'm extremely grateful. I've included links to his page on our blog, where you can buy this album, simply titled Rite, and his other work, which I enthusiastically recommend doing.